Hello again, and welcome to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 145. This is the podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. Earlier this week, I headed north from the city and drove to Bellingham, Washington, close to the U.S.-Canadian border. There, in lovely Whatcom County, I met Sarah Peabody for lunch at a charming cafe serving organic and locally grown food. That seemed apropos because we were ready to talk about putting more flowers, edible and non-edible alike, into the agricultural conversation. I've known Sarah and her husband Steve Peabody since their flower-growing operation, Triple Wren Farms, joined the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market 2 years ago. Sarah and I served together on the co-op's board for a while, and I've always been impressed by her level-headed approach to our discussions and the thoughtful and inclusive way she makes decisions as a leader at the market. Last winter, we talked about my visiting Triple Wren, and now that it's flower-growing season again, the time was right to make the trip. I warned Steve and Sarah in advance that I wanted to record our conversation for the Slow Flowers podcast, and fortunately for you, they were game. After lunch and a whirlwind chat, I followed Sarah even further north up the highway to the town of Ferndale. What beautiful countryside, where only a few miles off the interstate, you can find apple orchards and flower fields surrounding a charming farmhouse with a deep covered wraparound porch, perfect for sitting down with Sarah and Steve, and a jug of their cold, refreshing home-pressed apple cider. Steve poured, and we forgot about the recorder for a while, and you can join in vicariously. I wanted you to meet Sarah and Steve because they are a young flower farming couple who are nearly 100% self-taught. Trial and error doesn't seem daunting to them. Steve, a former Baptist pastor, has an incredibly gregarious personality, a can-do attitude, and the willingness to poke fun at himself while tackling challenges like raising chickens, pruning thousands of apple trees, and installing irrigation lines. He's sort of a city boy who has taken to farming with a passion. Like Steve, Sarah has an infectious smile and the type of optimism you hope rubs off on you. This is not an easy path, but it's one they are committed to walking together. And without owning the land on which they farm, Sarah and Steve are mindful of the steps they need to take to sustain Triple Wren for their future. I know you'll be inspired by their story, whether you're a young farmer or if you're more established. Before we get started, I'll share a little bit more about Triple Wren and the Peabody family. Triple Wren Farms is located in the heart of Smapple's You Pick Apple Orchard, which Steve manages for the Smith family, owners of the farm. Sarah, with Steve's help, has developed 2 acres surrounding the orchard where she grows cut flowers and seasonal produce. As you'll hear in our interview, they got started with sunflowers just 3 seasons ago. And the mix of annuals, perennials, edibles, bulbs, and woody floral ingredients they grow now for the marketplace has exploded. Since joining the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, Triple Wren has achieved Salmon Safe designation. The farm uses sustainable and non-certified organic practices. In addition to being part of the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, Triple Wren sells to local florists and groceries in Bellingham, Ferndale, and Linden, and this year launched a very successful DIY wedding flowers program. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, and I'm here in early June in Whatcom County at Triple Wren Farm with Sarah and Steve Peabody. Welcome.
Hi, Deborah. Thank you.
We've just had a walk through your farm, and I've been dazzled by all that you've managed to accomplish. It's still early in the season, right?
Yes.
The reason I wanted to, in addition to getting to see your farm and getting to know you better, the reason I thought it would be a great podcast interview is to talk about how to create a flower farm when you don't own land and maybe you didn't grow up in an agricultural background, and how you guys have managed to do that in just a few short years. So, Adam, do you want to start by describing what Triple Wren Farm is, maybe, and what year you're in and all of that, Sarah?
Sure. So we started in 2012, so we're technically in our third year, although sometimes we argue about whether that first year counted or not.
But yeah, we'll talk about year one.
So we changed entirely last year. So in our first real year or our second year of flower farming, we joined the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, which really gave us a steady outlet for the things that we grow. And it changed the whole scope of our business. So we started growing annuals, really just zinnias and sunflowers and maybe like 10 celosia and just a few things here and there.
That was in 2012.
In 2012. We just started out that way and quickly realized that by diversifying, we could strengthen our business so much. So last year we grew about 40 different varieties, and this year probably closer to 55. But I've been having this recurring dream where all I grow is sunflowers, and it's such a peaceful dream.
Oh, I thought you were saying it was a nightmare.
No, it was a wonderful dream.
Like less stressful.
Less complicated.
Well, the goal is to consolidate and grow more flowers of particular varieties. Instead, we keep getting more and more varieties. Somehow, I don't know.
I thought you were going to say more profitable flowers.
Well, that of course would be great.
So, some flower farmers I've interviewed have kind of told the story of starting with sweet peas, like Erin Benzocaine. Sure. That was her starter drug. So yeah. Sunflowers were your starter drug.
Well, I think so. Before we lived here at this farm, I did grow sweet peas. I usually grew a wall of them. It was like my favorite thing to do, and my friends all knew they could come and get them. But here it really was sunflowers for us because I was modeling after something I read that Lynn Bozinski did where she grew sunflowers in a hoop to get an early crop, and I thought, how hard could it be? And it was harder than I thought, but it's very doable. That was the first thing we did was early season sunflowers for 5-stem sales. And we put up a makeshift hoop house and we just dug in and did it, and it branched out from there.
Okay, so that was year one, and you told me the story about how you connected with the folks from the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, and right. Why don't you share an edited version of that, Sarah?
Yeah, sure. Well, so we were growing lots and lots of sunflowers that first year. We transitioned from the hoop into the field, and I misread an invoice for one of my grocery customers very near the end of the season, so mid-September here in the Pacific Northwest, and I thought they wanted 500 stems, 100 bunches of 5-stem sunflowers, and they wanted 500 bunches, and I had confirmed the order and realized my mistake, and I panicked, and I had known about the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market farmers and was really in awe of them. I had seen your 50-mile bouquet book, and
they've gotten like local press, and
yes, yeah. And I just thought, oh, they're in such a different league, they probably wouldn't even speak to me. But in a panic, I called them and said, I'm this crazy little flower farmer up north. Is there any way I could buy sunflowers from you? And they didn't have sunflowers. And the grocery buyer was quite gracious and understanding, and it was fine. No need to panic, really, right. Because she was so kind. But that gave me a connection with them. And once they started talking to me that first day, they said, you're selling your sunflowers for what price point? Oh, we need to come and talk to you. And I was really being naive and just selling my flowers for the first, you know, the price that made sense to me, really not factoring in labor, really not being smart business savvy-wise with that. And so they came and talked to me about appropriate pricing for our market, and they really started mentoring me unofficially. And I've morphed into more of an official. I mean, I treasure those relationships so much.
I've heard that Diane says she's mentoring you, but I think she's getting inspired by you, too, because everybody wants young farmers. In every category. When I was in Washington, D.C., meeting with USDA, they're fixated on young farmers and ranchers. And so, you know, they're maybe not quite making the leap to flower farmers, but we know that that's,
maybe
you know,
one day
you're the models.
Well, I treasure the relationship with Diane so much. And really, all the farmers at the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market have been free with their knowledge and answered lots of questions. And Diane's been out at our farm, and I begged her to just point, tell me what to do.
But you are.
And she's giving me a lot of good advice.
And Triple Wren is a fully fledged member of the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market. I mean, you have a permanent position there.
Yes, we are. And
this is
our second year doing that, second season.
And Sarah filled in on the board for a little while, too,
which was awesome. Yeah.
It was a great honor.
Yeah, we'll get her back. So, Steve, you have this other hat, and I see you had your Falcos in your pocket. Can you talk about how you're blending a different type of agriculture? And I mean, how did you guys end up here at Triple Wren, and how this has been growing year after year?
Sure. Dwayne and Doris Smith purchased this apple orchard that somebody else planted, and then in Dwayne's his story, he said, "Okay, I'm turning 50. I need to have a midlife crisis and buy a fast sports car or go back to college." So he's in Bible college getting a seminary degree, and his son was supposed to take over the farm, and that fell through, and so he was looking for somebody to keep the apple orchard, and here we are.
Wow. And so you're considered the orchard manager then?
Yes.
Okay. And you guys live here, surrounded by beautiful apple trees, and 0 to 60, you are like the apple king now.
Yes.
How'd that happen?
Dwayne is obviously a great man of faith. He asked me to come and oversee this, and I informed him that I really had no agrarian background at all. I did have a garden once that didn't do so well.
Well, you have Sarah, though.
Yes. That's my ace in the hole. But Sarah, I can do anything. So he kind of thought through what he would need to tell somebody, and he kind of, in a day and a half, gave me what he had learned in the last 10 years.
Of growing how many acres of apple trees?
Well, right now there's only about 5.5 to 6 acres of apples.
Okay.
There was 10, but yeah. Unfortunately...
Attrition.
Yes.
So, okay, so do you measure by acreage, or do you prefer to measure by the number of trees?
There's a little less than 3,000 trees.
Okay, that's a little bit more overwhelming than 5 acres.
I'm still overwhelmed.
And then when you think of how many apples each tree produces, you're adding a few more zeros, right?
Yes.
Wow.
There's when we count apples at the end of the season, we count in tonnage. So how many tons of apples? So
wow. So taking on this job as orchard manager has done a couple things that I've witnessed. One is it's gotten you deep into agriculture and into this community here in Whatcom County, which we should say you're near Bellingham. Bellingham is the closest large city to the Canadian border in the Northwest. So
yes.
This is a lot of agriculture up here.
It is. It is. Bellingham and Linden, they're... The cities are very, very friendly to agriculture.
And it's mostly food agriculture, though, right?
It is. Linden being high dairy and raspberry and blueberries, a little bit of strawberries, and, Bellingham, just a mix of everything.
Okay.
But food is the big agricultural pull.
So you guys agreed here to move as sort of live-work managers, and you have two small children. When did you actually decide to grow flowers? Sarah, you had a couple significant things that happened for you, right?
Sure. Right about the same time that we were thinking of moving here, I saw a library display that had the Flower Farmer book by Lynn Baczynski, and I read an article in a magazine about women entrepreneurs that talked about florette flowers and Aaron Benzkane, and I read Flower Confidential by Amy Stewart, all kind of in a row, and I thought, I had never even considered that. And it's really sad that I hadn't considered that there was an industry of domestic American farmers, because it's not something that was ever present in my shopping experience. Mm-hmm. And I think you are doing so much to change that between simply labeling flowers that are imported helps me realize, oh, but there could be domestic flowers.
Right.
And just you personally, we thank you so much for what you're doing to help the industry.
I think it takes a village, and we're all in it.
So seeing those press about those women, or I guess Amy was writing about a whole anthology about the industry, helped me to see that it is a possibility. And then there was some fallow land here, and Mr. Smith said, why don't you grow whatever you want and use my land? We asked him if it was okay to do flowers, and he said, of course. And so we just dove in.
Wow. And you were saying that you started with sunflowers. This soil, I'm looking off your beautiful covered porch at this field on the other side of the drive, and you were saying it's sandy. It looks really beautiful to me, but sandy soil I always think is like more whitish, or?
Well,
it's just very porous.
Okay.
So it filters water quite quickly, and it can also filter the nutrition in your soil out with
the
water.
Like leaching it out.
Yes. Okay. So you need to reapply. We this year we put in, I don't know how many yards of compost, mostly shoveled it in by hand. So that's what you see sitting
the darker is the new compost.
Okay. Right. Yes. So we mix it in.
Are you getting like cow manure, or?
We're getting compost. It's actually
mushroom and
it's a four-way from a company in Bellingham called Grow Source.
Okay.
Good people down there at Grow Source.
Thanks, God. You've done your research then.
We have, yeah. And there's a local company that does compost up here in Linden. And the problem is they they use their business, they use the compost started from the dairy farm, and they decided to get out of the dairy farm business, and so they sold the dairy, and then they now have a problem getting enough ingredients to make the compost. Right. Yeah, so they have to buy what they used to get for free.
Wow.
And they for a little bit of a lull, they've had a hard time keeping up.
But that's why you have this other source.
Yes, but we'll be buying
and
from them.
We have
again.
Learned a lot of things the hard way, which is why I would say to anyone who's thinking of starting a farm from scratch, having a mentorship could save you a lot of heartache.
Right.
Because we bought, for example, we bought some horse compost from a farm that kind of made their own. It was really cheap, and it was such a great deal.
They didn't sell it as horse compost. They said, hey, we've got this stuff. It's been sitting for 3 years.
And it's cured or whatever.
Yeah, and they said, look, there's stuff growing on the top of it.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why there's stuff growing on top of it, because it's full of...
Weeds?
Of seeds, yeah, that the horses don't take.
Yeah, care. Fully digest.
Yeah.
So you're learning every year, and I'd say you're teenagers in the flower farming world, right?
We are maybe very babies. Adolescent-like.
Sarah and I just had lunch and we chatted a little bit about your business model. I think there's so many interesting things that you're doing that relate to diversifying your business and also being part of the sustainable community here. Mm-hmm. Could you just describe sort of how you have developed these multiple channels?
Sure. Well, when we first started out, we took buckets of flowers to different florists and said, would you like to buy these? And they almost always said yes and bought them, which was great and exciting. But then we began to produce a volume that was beyond what those florists could use. So we branched out into grocery sales and did mixed bouquets and five-stem sunflowers. And that was good, but they were really only able to use, again, a certain amount of product,
right.
And we still had product. So being a part of the co-op in Seattle, where there is a conglomerate of growers who can really service a large volume of consumers, really changed our whole business plan, because it allowed us to grow a large volume and move it.
And know there was a distribution channel.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. So that made a world of difference for us last year. And this year, in addition to that, we're also doing we're trying to increase our local sales. Not to exclude Seattle sales, but just in addition to them. So we've started a do-it-yourself bride program and tailored where we just do one bride a weekend, and she has to book ahead of time, pay a deposit, and have a minimum fee, and then she can come to the farm and, well, she orders online via email, and then she comes to the farm, picks up her flowers, and knows they were grown specifically for her, that they're seasonal, and it's like a little snapshot of the day that she's getting married, what was going on in the world around her. We really try to cater to local Whatcom County, and especially our little slice of Whatcom County, brides, so that it truly is local. And that's been a great weekend source of revenue for us, much better than if we were to go and sit at a farmer's market. It's a lot less time for us.
Right.
It's more streamlined.
They're
those
coming
are
to you.
Things. Yes. Right.
Wow.
And we just harvest their items during the week at the appropriate time and hold them in our cooler for a day until they're ready, condition them however they need to be conditioned in the cooler, and then they have nice fresh product, fresher than they could get otherwise.
And on top of that, you said you're doing a little bit of custom growing. I find that fascinating. That's a huge selling point.
If a bride comes to us at least 6 months ahead of time, I make a big point of telling her she can buy, we'll grow for her whatever she'd like to buy. And so I don't typically grow gladiolus, but I was showing you I have several hundred white gladiolus planted for a bride whose wedding is in August. She specifically wanted them for these nice big tall pillars she has in the front. Those in Bells of Ireland is going to be really pretty,
goodness.
I think. So she knows that they were grown with love and care just for her.
Yeah. That's kind of exciting too for us, because that's something special that we can do especially for the bride that's hard to find.
Your competition can't do that. Like whatever the competition is, the grocery store or even the local, the Seattle wholesalers, the conventional importers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They can't necessarily offer that
so
fresh
for us,
seasonal product.
Nope.
It's great for our business because it's a story we can tell.
Yeah.
But it's great for the bride too.
Yeah.
And that is marketing for our business. The more times she tells her story.
That's true. And Sarah, you were saying that people find you through Pinterest, through word of mouth, now you've been on these wedding blogs. I mean, this is all just organic. No pun intended, right?
No, right.
And now that we're on the Deborah Prinzing podcast. I mean, we'll have hundreds of thousands of brides. 2-3 years out, we're set.
I don't want to burst your bubble, Steve, but we'll hope a few people at least get out there and we'll spread the word. I just think that that is a facet of flower farming that I've noticed a lot of farmers are successfully doing, and that is tapping into the wedding market, because there is this, I think it must, I don't know if it's like this in Whatcom County, but this parallel with what's happening with food, right? Where people are being more thoughtful about if they're going to spend money for a big occasion, they want their money to stay local or to support a farm or use a local chef. And obviously you're riding that wave then. Because you were saying the weddings are all in Whatcom County.
Right. We specifically do that. If I'm helping with the wedding in King County or really even Pierce or Snohomish County, it's through the wholesale growers market. It would be, right. Because I don't feel very comfortable with design, I specifically tailor it to DIY brides. You know, the link on my website page is, it's that, DIY brides, because it's the niche that we felt most comfortable with, at least at this point.
You're moving along, though, into floral.
She'll be there. She'll be there also.
I believe it. So you said that you put a photo of Shasta daisies and chamomiles and a wedding bouquet on Pinterest. You designed that then, right?
No, I actually just repinned something that came across my radar. It was feverfew and Shastas, and it got an incredible amount of attention right away. Single feverfew and the traditional single daisy, like, he loves me, he loves me not, Shastas.
Which you
and
grow both of.
Yes, right. Which was partly because I saw how much attention it's getting. Pinterest is a great tool, I think, for brides. Everyone thinks of it as a consumer tool, but it's also a great producer tool to see what is popular right now, because if people want to buy it, I want to grow it.
Right, right. And so you've added a lot of new things this year that you hadn't previously grown. Mm-hmm. You said you had 40 varieties last year and 50-some this year?
Right. Yes, we were supposed to be paring down.
What happened?
Well, we decided to put in some perennial crops that would like our soil a little better than some of the other more persnickety things I was trying to grow. I'm putting in about 1,400 Eryngium starts. They're sitting in my tunnel getting beefy right now.
So they like sandy soil?
They do. They like to be neglected. They like a little bit, not too much.
But they like so they're great for us. Neglect them, we'll neglect them.
You better take care of your kids before your Eryngium.
Yeah, that's right.
They like hot summers, and they like it a little bit dry, and you know, that's an easy problem to have with really porous soil.
So you're growing that kind of amethyst color one?
It's bright blue. We're doing blue glitter and white glitter, those two. And we may put in some blue globe thistles, like some echinops. Mm-hmm. And we're doing amaranth. We did a lot of amaranth last year. We're doing more of it this year. And we're doing quinoa, which I'm really excited about. It's a new crop for us.
That, you were mentioning that. That's crazy.
As a cut, should be really fun, especially for late summer and fall sales.
So a kind of a seed head looking.
Yes, it's an asymmetrical seed head. The kind we're growing has a pearlescent sheen to it. And it's a mix of bright, wonderful fall colors, not just rusts and oranges, but also some pinks and some chartreuse in there too, it looked like. So we'll see. It's coming along very well.
So you heard of another flower farmer using it, growing it in another market, and no one really that I know of at the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market is growing that.
Right. It's supposed to grow.
Don't tell them.
It's supposed to grow really well in not as nutritive soil, so maybe it's a good mountain crop, I think, from South America. Mm-hmm. So we tried to plant it in the places where other things didn't thrive, and it's thriving.
Mm-hmm. And back to your shushing me, Steve, Sarah has said so many times just in this conversation that we've had for the last couple hours, she's very thoughtful about not wanting to intrude on a crop that perhaps another grower at the co-op is doing, and I think that is sort of the spirit of the market, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, it really is. In the neat thing about the market is you have one farm that's known for this particular flower, and then the rest of us can grow another variety of the same flower, or obviously different colors that, if they don't specialize in that, and really just complementary flowers. And that's where we're focused. Probably primarily we want to grow dual purpose crops, stuff that we can harvest for cuts and that are edible. That's a big passion of mine.
Yeah, I want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then secondarily we look, okay, last year what sold at the market? And the market's very, very helpful saying, hey, here's what sold, here's how many we sold, here's who we sold it to. And so we can look at that, analyze it, and say, you know what, there's a big hole, nobody's doing this. Or we talk to the florists and they say, boy, it would be nice if you also would supply this, this, and this, because I come to the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market and I grab this stuff, and then I have to, just because I have to run
the shop. Go to Brand X, yeah.
I have to go to the next one, and I don't want to go there. It's a boring, dead place.
Yeah.
But I have to, because I have to, well. Yeah.
He's not naming names.
Yeah, they don't, I didn't tell
them. That's why I said Brand X.
Yeah, there you go. Well, yes. So they're, I mean, and they're not trying to be spiteful or anything. They're just saying, they come there first for a reason.
They have the ethos and value system of wanting to support the local farmer.
Right.
Yeah. And you want to, you don't want to disappoint them.
Right. In the words of one florist, he used those words exactly. He said, oh, I love coming here because those other places are just boring. They sell this, you know, the white stock, you know, and this is what sells. And so this is what we're going to, he said, I come here. He said, who knows? I might find wisteria here one week. I said, this is crazy. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to speak to what you were saying about record keeping, I would say for a beginning farmer,
yes,
that is essential.
Yes.
Keep track of everything, from how many hours you spend seeding to how many hours you spend weeding to what, how many stems you sold of what. And it becomes a little overwhelming. So get a good system. You know, use QuickBooks or design a Google Docs spreadsheet that works for you, or use a clipboard, or ask a farmer who's done it what works for them, and find something that's a good system for you and do that. Because when we started doing that, it became really clear what we needed to grow more of. And once I kept track of how much I was shrinking or throwing into the compost, I realized I was growing too much of that. And just like a
shifted then.
Yeah,
and just you don't even realize. And it's so much so much clarity, because you'll forget 2 weeks down the road.
Especially in the middle of a busy season. You're just trying to survive. You're
not counting. That's so true. I'll remember that next year.
Yeah,
and then, you won't.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to, I would really encourage, we're keeping a farm journal, a detailed farm journal this year for the first time, as well as our record keeping system. And while we do rely on the market staff to help us with sales there, that's not our only sales. And sometimes we shrink stuff before it even leaves the farm, so it's good to know.
So is it like a grid where you have week by week across the top and then every variety down the left?
For the record keeping, I do it by crop.
Okay.
So every time I seed a tray of sunflowers, I jot it down. Yeah,
okay.
I just try. And I'm not perfect with it, but if I was, it would be even more valuable.
Right.
And I think that there are other farmers. I think Diane's really very meticulous about record keeping. I'm not sure her system exactly, but you know, there's experienced farmers that you can ask as a beginning farmer, and that information is going to be so useful to you.
Yeah, you have to tailor it to your farm and need.
And one of the things we're doing with our farm journal this year is we're keeping weather notes, because not every year is a copy of the previous year, and knowing what did well in a hot summer. Besides the fact that, yeah, Celosia is going to do well in a hot summer, but specifically for your microclimate, what's doing well in a hot summer? Or for us, we have the potential to have a cool, wet summer in the Pacific Northwest. So
yeah. We 2 years ago, when we were just starting, we did have an unusually dry summer. And so knowing that all the professional farmers, they say, hey, this is going to be a rough summer. This is going to be a hot, dry summer, and we're predicting droughts. So if you're on top of your game fast enough, you can tailor what you're planting, or, you know.
Or add irrigation.
Lots of irrigation.
It's making me want to ask you about that, because we were in the back looking at the area where you have had the ping pong scabiosa planted that was a pretty amazing story. With the, I'll let Sarah tell that in a minute, but with the, the black
Sunbelt.
Yeah.
Sunbelt landscape.
I said, I noticed all the irrigation and how beautiful it looked, and I said, Sarah, how did you guys learn how to do all this drip irrigation? And you said, we taught ourselves.
Yeah, Steve did it.
We would love to know how to do irrigation. We're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, but do you have a well, or what's your water source?
We do have a well, and the iron, it gives about one part water to two part iron.
How's that working?
Not good, not pleasant at all.
But do the apple trees like it?
Yeah, apples don't care. If you eat some apples, you do not have to take any iron for your whole life. You have enough iron infused apples.
I don't know.
Well, I'm so glad we're sitting here enjoying this amazing cider pour me some more, Steve.
Okay, here we go.
We'll get a little sound effect.
We press it right here at the farm.
Oh, lovely. And you froze it and thawed it for us today, so I'm delighted. The color is amber. It's stunning.
Mm.
It's so beautiful. It looks like a micro beer. That color is perfect.
Tastes much better.
Absolutely. So one of the things that you talked about, Steve, about you prefer growing edibles, and obviously you're Mr. Orchard, but It sounds like you're kind of collaborating on growing all the edible foliage mm-hmm. that you are kind of seeing as a, back to your dual purpose.
Sure.
Talk about the crops that you're growing for the bouquets or straight bunches that are all edibles.
Okay, so we put in a whole new section of herbs that may, you know, it will even be better next year or this year, but we planted several hundred, sometimes 1,000 of about 15 kinds of mint. We did Korean mint, we did mountain mint, we did pineapple mint.
I didn't know there were 15 different types. That's amazing.
Well, I could be exaggerating.
Last year, we didn't either. Now we have them all.
And we're growing types of varieties of marjoram and oregano. I guess marjoram's kind of mm-hmm. a wild oregano yeah. and thyme that get a little taller, and we did a more dense spacing to kind of force them up to use them for cuts.
But to get also, longer stems, you
right,
mean.
Yeah. Yes, right, to
and
force
we'll,
them tall.
Well, specifically for the cuts, we'll get the king bloom, which mm-hmm. is going to be a longer, and then once you harvest that first bloom with a tall stem, then the other ones are great for restaurants and chefs. And
oh, for the culinary customer.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So we like to do edible bouquets. We are doing the mints, the just traditional culinary herbs. We did snow peas for an early season filler because it's just got that nice wild look that's so popular right now.
Nasturtium for filler too, right?
Yeah, we did.
For bouquets.
Nasturtium for bouquets.
So the snow peas, you're just using the pea vines.
Yes, and we're selling them at the wholesale growers market as, you know, foliage, just bunches of 10.
Brilliant.
And they're flying off. I could have planted probably 100 times as much as I did. So we're trying to make it so that we have edible foliage that could produce fruit or, you know, vegetables all throughout the year. That would be ideal.
That
we have
fantastic.
A pumpkin patch every year during our our apple orchard is a U-pick orchard. So we do U-pick pumpkins and
maybe you could do U-pick herbs in the
maybe.
There you go.
No, maybe not.
That's a great idea.
Well, that's really cool. I think that the idea that you mentioned about, you know, the local market for the restaurants and the mm-hmm. boats or something like that.
Yeah, there's
you know?
A couple of docks in Bellingham yeah. and yeah. Anacortes where there's a couple of women who have flower huts and they want to sell edible bouquets so that people who live on houseboats can have a dual purpose bouquet in their home.
Lovely.
So space is key on a boat.
Yeah, that'd be a cool niche. That would be a really cool niche.
Yeah.
So the it sounds like the spring and summer is very busy with the flowers, and then the U-pick farm opens. I mean, I know, Steve, you're busy year-round, but that's got a particular vibe, right? And that's
sure.
how many weeks in the fall?
Usually I open up toward the end of September, and I go till we sell them all, which, fortunately, last year we were able to finish up about the second week of November. So our goal really would be probably to be finished with the varieties we have. Would be finished probably the first week of November. Now, we are trialing a couple of different varieties this year and trying to extend the season that way. But
what, for early or late?
For late.
Late
yeah.
apple ripening or whatever.
Yes, we do have a couple of summer apples, and we might plant some more of those to open the season up early. But right now, I'm wholesaling all of the early apples.
And you're involved with this local sustainable community in
mm-hmm.
Whatcom
sustainable
County.
Connections.
Can you talk about that?
Sustainable
Connections.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the Sustainable Connection in Bellingham is, they're like a business networking. So almost like a chamber of commerce.
For sustainable businesses.
Right,
oh,
yeah. Just I can't really speak. Derek has drilled this into me, but I can't remember what they are. But their tenants are really looking after energy efficiency. Don't be wasteful with your energy and getting green if possible. Toward zero waste in your business,
wow.
which applies to agriculture as
sure.
well,
yeah.
and really just tapping into the local community. They focus eat local
mm-hmm.
For an entire month, and then they really do a tremendous job of really education, saying, hey, do you know where your food is coming from?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we got paired up with this group, they are excited because they say, hey, that's a niche that we haven't really thought about. We're all on board with, we're going to make sure exactly we know where our beans came from and our chicken and who's growing our pork. But yeah, I guess I don't realize where the daisies on my table are from.
Oh, so you kind of brought them along.
Well, yes, I'd be hesitant to say that, but...
well, Sarah
yes.
said that they buy flowers from you for events and that you're in a mentoring program,
yes.
so...
Yes, they, in addition to all the good work with education, what they've done is they've got a... it's called the Food to Bank On program, mm-hmm. and so they pair up beginning farmers or wannabe farmers with some established growers, some people who've been growing and farming for 20, 30 years. And then through their insistence that we meet with our mentors regularly, and we just really inundate them with all the questions we can do, or we can give them, that it really helps us. They paired me up with Cloud Mountain, Tom Thornton and his wife Cheryl up there in Everson. And Tom's been growing orchard apples for, I think, 20, 30 years. I think he's the apple expert in this area. He doesn't like that term, but everybody who knows about apples asks him about
That's
apples.
That's a gift, then, that you get to kind of absorb some of that.
And he's just open and saying, hey, you got a question, email me, call me, whatever, come by the farm. And they're very, very helpful with that. But then really just helping younger farmers, and this is back to the whole mentorship, helping them think through, okay, yeah, you could do it that way, but practically, can you really make a living doing it that way?
Right.
You need to think in the grander scheme of how many hours are you putting in to do that? Okay, yeah, if you had two apple trees, that'd be fine, but can you do that with 3,000? No. You need to find a better way to do that.
Wow. In terms of systems and processes and that sort of thing.
Right. And addressing maladies in the orchard and what's going on and what you do and your approach.
We even got some marriage advice from that. There's this other couple who has a CSA in Bellingham, and it's a husband and wife, and he gave us some really good tips on
how not to kill each other.
Yes. He said, you're going to be with each other a lot. It will strengthen your marriage or ruin it.
That's been helpful for many aspects of our life.
Well, you know, we've alluded to this whole idea of choosing farming as a lifestyle, as a way to support yourself and your family and raise your family. You guys are kind of at this point where you've got to decide in the next couple of years which direction you're going to go, because you don't own this land. And I think that's the problem with for younger families and younger farmers or ranchers, is you need land to base the business on, right? So are you starting to see, I mean, Sarah alluded to the fact that if the flowers continue to be successful, that might end up becoming a source of a down payment or something like that if you did buy your own land.
Well, yeah, for sure. The way that we're going now, it's definitely a viable business. Our only question is, how soon can we as younger farmers get where we need to be, the next chapter, basically?
Right. And you got a little bit of time.
Yes, got a little bit of time. And there again, is helpful to be with the groups that we've kind of aligned ourselves with. You know, the Sustainable Connections, they bring, when in the mentorship program, they have got these, I think they're bi-weekly meetings that I'm required or highly encouraged to attend.
In your spare time.
Yeah. They take place in the winter, so nobody wants to be out in the field when it's wet and cold.
Especially here, right?
So now come to Bellingham and we'll have a potluck. It'll be warm. So, and they bring in these established farmers, and one of which in Bellingham, Cedarville Farms with Mike Finger, he actually has rented his land for his entire time that he's had his operation. They are the largest CSA in Bellingham, and they've been going 20 or 30 years.
That's interesting to see that as a viable option then.
It's absolutely
viable. I didn't realize that.
And he really challenged us to consider that. You know, he said everybody wants their own land, obviously. But if you can work out an arrangement with a landowner that is, that you got to be on the same page with them. But they had opportunity, he was sharing with us, to get their own land a while ago. But he said, you know, I've got such a great relationship. And so they are, they're just continuing to rent. And they're one of the premier CSAs in Bellingham.
That's encouraging then. I thought it was an either or thing, like own your own land or, you know, be lucky like this, you know, and which isn't permanent.
Because this isn't permanent, it's made us think a lot. Everything we do, we think, okay, how would we move this, and how much time would it take, and what time of year would we have to do it? We're always thinking about that. So we sort of have a roughed-in game plan of what we will do when the time comes that the owners come back and we move everything.
Well, you're talking, like, obviously annual crops, no big deal.
No, right.
But you're going to have to dig some things up, move some hoop houses.
And you have to, hoop houses and landscape fabric and irrigation, all of those things.
Yes. One of the things that we love to, one of our big crops is fruited crab apples. And And we've just planted some other edibles that we use.
And arrangements. Or
yeah, moving an apple tree is kind of a big deal.
Really?
Moving a crab apple tree is a big deal.
So, yeah, so the crab apple branches that Triple Rin Farm has been bringing to the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, that is, you planted those crab apple trees, or were they already here and just not being utilized?
It was a wasted resource. Yeah.
Wow.
Every year an apple tree, domesticated apple trees are grafted.
Okay.
We don't use what comes from seeds. They don't taste very good.
Okay.
They're great for cider, but...
not for eating apples or cooking apples.
Right, so they're grafted and they're very engineered, and just the way they designed them, they need to be taken care of every year. So they need to be pruned every year and shaped and trained. But what do you do with those trimmings? So I've got a couple of folks that we give them the clippings, and they use it to smoke pigs, and they love it
for
barbecue.
For that apple wood, yeah.
Oh, it's good stuff. And then we've got... My brilliant wife says, hey, I bet we could sell these to florists, because I would love to see this in arrangement. You got early spring, you got green. Summer, you start to get different colors. We've got some orange, a little bit of orange in them. Most of them are going to be a kind of a green reddish. And some
the
of them
fruit?
Turn, yeah, the
okay.
fruit,
wow.
yes.
We
yes.
even have some yellow ones.
Yeah, the yellows are great. And I think the biggest pull are those red ones, the Manchurian snow crab, because it looks just brilliant red. And... She said, I think this would make a great bouquet.
Put in a big urn or something at the front of a podium or at a wedding. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
So there are some that are already blushing in early June. We're selling them apples as cuts. And we sell, I put crab apples in almost every arrangement
right.
I make.
Right.
So.
It gives a little nod to the, and it's
a
nod to that little edible element that it seems like you also really incorporate edibles because it makes sense. It's sort of who you are as your distinctive.
I think foodie weddings are becoming really popular, and this year we're putting in at least 100 feet of different variety. We're doing a trial, really, of different varieties. We're grafting our own cherry and plum tomatoes, and so we're going to be having at the market bunches of green tomatoes for bouquets.
Oh my goodness, like on the vine.
On the vine.
On the vine,
yeah.
Yep.
All right, that is going to blow up. So exciting. I
Good
love
to
it.
Hear.
Love it, love it, love it. Well, and when we post the show notes for this podcast, I want to make sure I have the links to like your Instagram and
Great.
Pinterest, and also people can see every day practically what Sarah's posting. And I know you're quite the social media guru as well, Steve. Sarah, tell me what you've been doing, like creating a website for the Apple Farm and creating, you know, a online presence that maybe the farm previously didn't have. So
it's a delicate balance of actually doing the work of farming and making it look online like you're doing it. So right now I'm just
36
doing...
hours a day.
Yes, sign me up for that day. I would love to have three of them a week.
We do much more Facebook posting in the winter.
Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately.
When nothing is beautiful and green.
Well, you save all your photos and then sort of
there you go.
Send them out there into the universe. Well, this has gone by so quickly. You guys are so awesome. I really have enjoyed spending time with you, and I guess I better come back in August when I really see how the fields are blowing out and all the goodies that
you see what happened to your ping pong scabiosa.
Oh yeah. All right, tell that story, and we'll end on this, Sarah.
Oh, I tell you what, Deborah, I appreciate you so much. I was in Deborah's home for a board meeting in February, and I was asking the other farmers, does anyone have any dried ping pong scabiosa saved? I have a late February wedding, and the bride really wants some dried pods in her bouquet, and no one did, and Deborah looked over and there were some in a vase in her kitchen, and she whisked them out and she said, here, you can have these.
And I'm like blowing the dust off them.
And I was able to use some of them, but I had many left over, and I'm a compulsive seed starter. It's kind of a sickness that I have.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's like the botanist in her.
I tucked some into trays just to sit with my kids.
So you just like shook it and the seeds came out.
I did, and so I put some in seed, like a 288 tray. I just tucked some in and did it with my kids for fun just to see what would happen. And they sprouted. They were so cute. They weren't cleaned. They were just directly off the pod. So they all looked like they had little megaphone heads or granny's bonnets on their heads. The kids thought it was hilarious. And I thought, well, if those started, and I planted about 1,000 of them, and now I have a whole row coming on. And Deborah, you need to get unlimited ping pong scabiosa from
and
the market.
It comes full circle, because I bought that scabiosa from someone at the market last summer.
Wow.
So, you know, now the cycle continues. But that just shows me how brilliant you are as a just an experimental farmer. You like you'll try growing things that, like the quinoa, that you know conventional wisdom would say don't bother. So I think
well, it doesn't all turn out so happy. But,
but we don't talk about those.
It makes a great story.
It is great. Well, thank you both so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed meeting. Seeing the farm and spending more time with you. Obviously, I've met you, but I'm enjoying introducing you to the listeners of this podcast because I think that Steve and Sarah are a model for what a lot of young farmers are trying to achieve. And there, you are alone a lot. It's kind of a solitary endeavor. And so it's great to hear from you. So those your fellow farmers around the country who maybe will never meet you in person might take a little bit of encouragement and maybe reach out to you too and follow you well, socially, at least virtually.
We would love to connect. We're really honored that you would feature us. Thank you, Deborah.
You bet. And you know that within a very short period of time, you're going to be the mentors. So the cycle continues.
I'll believe it when it happens.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for joining today's conversation with Triple Rinse, Sarah and Steve Peabody. Please visit DeborahPrinzing.com for show notes and a peek at photos of the farm, the flowers, and the Peabody family, including their two adorable little children. And I'll also include a link to a fabulous Q&A that Alicia Schwede of Flirty Flirs conducted with Sarah last fall. Thank you for joining today's conversation. The message I take from our episode is one that both Sarah and Steve emphasized. Mentorship is important. I encourage all you veteran flower farmers to reach out and share your expertise, experience, years of knowledge, and passion with someone just getting started. Pay it forward. And soon those young flower farmers will, in turn, follow your example and share with the next generation that comes after them. It's key to saving our American-grown floral industry. Please join me next week for another insightful and educational episode of the Slow Flowers Podcast. Thanks to listeners like you, this podcast has been downloaded nearly 13,000 times. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging onto iTunes and posting a listener review. Until next week, please join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. The Slow Flowers Podcast is engineered and edited by Hannah Holdgertz and Andrew Wheatley. Learn more about their work at hhcreates.net.